Byron Radio.
Ditching pretentious menus. Somebody who's never pretentious in any way, shape, or form. She keeps it real, whether she's in Vegas or the joys of Gibraltar, is Gabriella Peralta, who now, if all being well and the systems are working, will be able to provide the weather for Lincoln from Gibraltar.
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln from Gibraltar is highs of 17 degrees centigrade, lows of 6 degrees centigrade. Today is going to have sunny intervals with a moderate breeze.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Exactly. And what is the state of consciousness of faithful friend Frodo?
Oh, he was literally just snoring until he heard my dad get up, and now he's run after him.
Marvellous.
He's turned from snoring to wide awake. I don't know how they do it.
Well, it's probably the seasonal change, as in many ways you could argue we're now in autumn, given that September arrives and next week graduation, week after that, Freshers Week. It's all at the University of Lincoln. If you're listening to this elsewhere and you don't have any connection with any university whatsoever, that's okay. You're welcome. It's all fantastic stuff. Much as Theresa May would actually reaffirm the United Kingdom's Brexit commitments to Gibraltar in the Gibraltar Chronicle, your fantastic newspaper that you, well, actually, they're privileged to have you, Gabrielle. Let's face it, you should put that through from that point of view. But is that good news, or is it a case of she's a politician? You can't believe anything she says.
They said it in the past. The thing is, this was in, this came out because Gibraltar is celebrating its National Day on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So Bob Neil, the MP, came out saying, you know, everyone should, celebrate National Day alongside the Gibraltarians and at least wish them a happy National Day. So he was wishing us a happy National Day and ensuring that we are part of Brexit negotiations, and Theresa May agreed. She said it in the past, but she hasn't said it for quite a while, to be honest, and it was more in regards of our National Day as well. So it's probably like her little message. She usually gives a National Day message. She did last year. So it's probably part of her wider message that we'll see on Monday.
So that sounded good. Aaron Craig, did you realise it was National Day in Gibraltar just a few days ago? Well, we should celebrate. I mean, you know, we had a comment on one of the social media sites, which actually has resulted in me banning the person now, basically saying, another post from Lincoln for the James Cook University Hospital in Teesside. I've told you, there are branches around these. Sometimes you get very confused. But Gibraltar, have you ever been?
No, it's somewhere I'd quite like to go, really, because obviously being very much like Britain with a son, I'd quite like to go there. And it was obviously being in the British Army, it was somewhere I never actually got to go to, but yeah, it was somewhere I'd like to love to go to, really, Gibraltar.
Gabriella, do you like that description? Like Britain with sun?
We had that TV show that ran on Channel 5. I think it was like maybe 7 years ago. We had that Channel 5 TV show called Britain in the Sun, so it's probably quite an apt description of Gibraltar.
Well, there you go. And a national stadium. I mean, we obviously keep connections going because, Aaron, I'm sure you've got a finger on the pulse. Apart from Gabriella Peralta being a graduate of the University of Lincoln and ace midweek driver, one of the key football teams in Gibraltar is indeed called the Lincoln Imps.
Any good?
Well, they got into one of the... exactly.
But they run the national, Gibraltar Cup, I think it was like 20 years running.
Well,
recently I think they had that run broken. I think another team won, and it was like a big deal because it was the first time in 20 years that they'd been beaten. But yeah, since football's been taken a lot more serious.
Excellent.
They definitely have had a good run. I know that Lincoln football team, from when I was in Gibraltar, had a lot of struggles. When I was in Lincoln, had a lot of struggles during those years. And I don't know how they are now.
It's all wonderful.
I was there when they moved from professional to part-time. I can't remember if they still part-time.
Are we talking Lincoln City or Lincoln Leaps?
Yeah, Lincoln City.
Lincoln City are top of the League Division 2 at present, basically, the
okay,
league for that.
Wow.
And progressing solidly in the whole system. So clearly it's just win-win situation. If you're, if you've got a Lincoln connection there, it's wonderful. I can see Middlesbrough signing a Lincoln player. It's automatically. There we are. Okay, so talk us through this little thing about national stadium plans cleared by the DBC. Is this good news that we've got another national stadium being based here, that internationals can play and various other things?
Well, Gibraltar never... Well, we did have a stadium before, but it wasn't up to UEFA standards, so we became part of UEFA, meaning that we have to now do proper international matches. We just didn't have the capacity to, you know, have thousands of people. So now the stadium has been slowly improved just to meet some of the categories. And now we're just going to redo it and make it into an 8,000-seater stadium. And I think the seats have to be covered, because right now what you've got is you've got some covered seats and then some seats in the sun. So it's just a whole revamp of the whole stadium just to fit UEFA standards, so we can have a proper national stadium when you play
England and other great sides, possibly like Northern Ireland.
We never played England. We played Celtic, and actually the Lincoln Imps did score against Celtic. I think they scored one, I think.
That's all you really need.
Oh, they won against Celtic,
So Gibraltar coming a step closer to having a national football stadium yesterday after the Development and Planning Commission gave outline planning approval to plans filed by the Gibraltar FA. It's awesome. Gabriella, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I have, thank you.
Marvellous. Can we look forward to connecting with you again next week? I'm sure Phil Linus might be back by then, but you know, it's midnight in Los Angeles, he's very busy. Probably hasn't forgiven me for my comments about his fiancée singing. I mean, it's a tough call, actually, Aaron. I thought long and hard about that.
Something bad.
Well, I just said she couldn't sing
that. Best policy.
You know, I think she's a Broadway singer. I apologise unreservedly to clearly Lily Holloman and Phil Leonis if they were taken by that. But one of them wasn't too bad, but another one, oh, Lord above. Anyway, that's the views of the presenters of Siren Radio are not necessarily made to be, they're not gospel necessarily. Make your own decision. Are you back with us next week?
Yes, hopefully.
I blame you for the moonlit sky and the dream that died with the eagle's flight. I blame you for the moonlit nights when I wonder why are the seas still dry. Don't blame me.
First time in Lincoln for 6 years, Executive Chef Aaron Craig.
Yep.
How did you sleep last night?
I had a really, for the first time, I had a
a really soft bed. It was really, you sort of sunk into it. I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing, but I always wake up 2 or 3 times during the night, so it's that's a common occurrence, so I don't know if that's good or bad.
Somebody who was very excited when I said we were having an executive chef from Rockcliffe Hall on the show today, because chefs work so many long hours, etc., probably in need of the sleepy-haired clinic, hence, of course, sleeping satellite. It's our awesome Stephanie Romaszewski. How are you, Stephanie?
I'm very well, thank you.
So, Stephanie, you've just heard Aaron's little description of his first trek to Lincoln for some time, and wait, two, three times during the night? Possibly.
Yeah, always.
Always, right. Is that a case of, well, he's just got to learn to live with that now, that's the matter, of course, or is there a solution?
Well, it really depends, like, it's a small amount of information to go on, but it's actually quite common for us to wake up frequently in the night. It's not so common for us to remember it. So if you find that you are waking up frequently during the night, there might be a reason. It could be that you need to, is it that you're drinking too much water? Are you going to the loo? Is it a habit? So often our bodies get into a habit. So if you did it, say, for a week, your body will remember it and it will actively wake you up because it thinks that's what you want. So there's lots of different reasons, but there's definitely, once you figure it out or once, you know, we've evaluated it, there's definitely ways we can resolve it.
Ways that can be resolved.
Be resolved.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's just, I think it's probably is a habit it's something I've done for years, really. Woke up maybe twice, a couple of times a night. But sometimes it's really scary because sometimes I wake up thinking of stuff I haven't done during the day. And it's on my, as soon as I wake up, there's something on my mind straight away of maybe something I haven't done. And it's really odd how that can come to your mind straight away.
Yeah, so super common. Naturally, we don't necessarily give ourselves time before we go to bed to put all those thoughts to bed, as it were. Often I'll tell my patients, on top of everything else they have to do, I will give them some sort of little diary, so really simple, and just ask them to reflect on their day and maybe just write 3 good points and 3 bad points and maybe a small little to-do list for tomorrow. Nothing huge, something that they know they'll 100% be able to achieve so that their brains trust that they'll follow through with the intention. And then after you've done that for a few times, what you're actively doing is giving your body a chance to get rid of those thoughts. Some people might think, well, if I start encouraging myself to do that, won't I be worrying more before I go to bed? But actually, your brain, it's all there anyway, and it will push it out at some really inappropriate moment, like in the middle of the night. So if you can give yourself 10 minutes at exactly the same time each day, your body will get used to doing it. Your brain will understand and trust what you're going to do. And actually, you'll be much more likely to be not empty of thoughts, because that's completely impossible, but you'll be much more content before you go to bed.
Sounds good.
Once again, profound words. People presume I'm obsessed with sleep hygiene and perfectionism when it comes to sleep. But this is what you need to attain sleep greatness. The irony is I teach the exact opposite. Not my words, the words of Stephanie Romaszewski there from your latest update on Facebook at Sleepyhead Clinic. And as you said, it's okay to enjoy yourself during the week, even on a school/work night.
Yes. Like, I'm not saying that every night we should be going out super late and having the time of our lives, but the people that are obsessed with sleep habits, they're obsessed with having sort of a hot milk before they go to bed, a warm bath, all that stuff. The evidence base for that stuff is that if you're a good sleeper and you just want to improve the quality of your sleep a bit, then perhaps these things can help. The evidence base is not that if you do these things, you will have a perfect night's sleep. In fact, exactly the opposite. The more that you worry about these things and that you sort of start to rely on them, you start to see them as crutches, which means if you don't do them, suddenly you assume you're going to have a terrible night's sleep. So it's actually a lot better to be consistent about 70% of the time, but then to get your body used to, even if you go to bed late, even if you have the cheeky espresso after a dinner party, okay, maybe you will not sleep as well, but it's not going to then affect the rest of your week. And you need to have a belief that that is the case, because otherwise the stress of what you're doing, the anxiety of your belief is enough to disrupt your sleep more than the physical thing that you actually did.
Aaron, as I say, executive chef, I know over the years, your schedules can be a little bit all over the place, really. I mean, does that kind of interfere with your work patterns at all?
It's really strange, really, because I can get home maybe 12 o'clock at night, and I need to unwind. My wife goes sort of wild with me, really, about I should go to bed and sleep, but I never really can. I need to wind down.
Yeah. And, absolutely.
So it can be 1:30, 1, but there's no set time to when I go to bed. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but, you know, I need to wind down after work, and it's so it can be any time between 1, 2 o'clock before I go to bed, and then I'm back up maybe 7:30 to go again. Really.
Yeah, chefs do have these crazy schedules, but the thing is, actually, the time we go to bed is less important, but if you're getting up at the same time every day, your body at least can get used to something consistent. And actually, duration of sleep, it is very important, but the quality of your sleep is more important. So getting up at the same time every day is really, really important. And trying to go to bed once you've wound down and you're feeling sleepy tired is very important. And especially for chefs, being able to, I mean, I wouldn't say that an average person needs to catch up on sleep, but as long as, so when you're off shift, you can maybe, if you need to, this is only if you need to, go to bed when you're sleepy, and that might be a few hours earlier when you're not on shift. That's fine. That's a good thing. But it's the morning, it's the waking up that's important for the quality of your sleep.
And what do you think, Stephanie, of people taking their gadgets to bed, their telephones, their iPads, their laptops?
No. So that is something I would stay away from. I know we talk a lot about this idea about blue light and the fact that it's bad for you, but actually, really, it's just the stimulation. So I don't think it's ideal. If you're stressed in the night and you can't sleep, then I feel that you should be able to get out of bed and do something you enjoy. And if that's watching something on your iPad, I would not say that was a bad thing, because you're trying to reduce your anxiety and make yourself feel better. That's absolutely fine. But getting into a habit of taking anything to bed, technology-wise, is not helpful. There isn't any evidence that it's helpful. And I worry about these trackers, because they're getting people to be obsessed over their sleep.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're ideal either. I think if your perception is that you had a good night's sleep, regardless of what happened, that perception is actually way more important. Your brain and the power of your beliefs is so much more important than whatever physically happened. You do have the power to sleep well. You were born with that. And your body, given the opportunity, without you altering your behaviours all the time, or any of us altering our behaviours all the time, it will fix itself. But we love to alter our behaviours when we think things are going wrong, and that's actually when we start mucking up with our sleep.
And does listening to things like music or one of Alex's podcasts to go to sleep, are they any good?
So I don't think there's anything wrong with winding down to something that you find relaxing, just making sure that there is a timer on it, so that if you accidentally fall asleep, because it's common that the thing that can help you drift off is the same thing that can wake you up, because if Alex's voice is so soporific to you that you find it lovely and relaxing and sleepy, but what if, 10 minutes later you've fallen asleep and he changes the pitch of his voice and suddenly something in your brain wakes you from a deep stage of sleep to a light stage of sleep. You might not notice, but in the morning, if you're feeling really groggy, even though you felt like you slept for a certain amount of hours, it could be what you were doing just before you go to bed. So just making sure you have a timer on those things. So if you're using them, that they're literally only going to help you fall asleep. They're not going to stop disrupting your night's sleep.
Stephanie, you take my breath away when we go into the danger zone with Goose and a variety of other things. Referencing a classic 1980s movie, what were you doing watching Top Gun in the open fields?
Trying to make the most of the last few days of summer, but it was absolutely freezing. So.
Yeah, but Tom Cruise would have been proud of you. You know, I'm sure that that's why he's actually making a sequel to Top Gun, and that's going to be happening. So
I can't wait.
There are certain movies which are just quite awesome, and indeed, I have just liked and shared on social media your line from last week in terms of why do we feel so lethargic after bank holidays? All sorts of reasons there. And as we just pointed out there, you can check out that and all our other previous weird and wonderful sleep chats. You see, they shared it. They said the series is just moving on into double figures and beyond. You can, of course, access at Sleepyhead Clinic as far as Facebook's concerned. You can go to the website as well. A whole heap of other goodies from that point of view. It is international. It's Southwest's gift to the world. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today, Stephanie Romaszewski?
As usual, absolutely.
And the second question, Aaron, is...
Can we look forward to you returning to Siren 107.3?
Of course.
Brilliant. That'll be 2 weeks. Fancy a bit of Kenny Loggins and Danger Zone?
Oh, nice. No.
as you may recall, Aaron and anybody else who was with us for the Midweek Drive yesterday, Phil Lehner's not that impressed with the box office takings of The Spy Who Dumped Me. Pretty much a disaster. I equally, given that it's a week clearly where I was critical of Lily Holloman's singing, I was also almost incandescent when I saw the anti-James Bond article that Richard had put together. I thought it was dreadful. Richard, are you there? How are you, sir?
I am certainly there.
Sorry. Let's not talk about James Bond because, I thought he was claiming Bond's too old. He should actually go. He even used the phrase that Judi Dench employed in GoldenEye about a sexist, misogynist dinosaur. It's just not acceptable. I'm sorry, Richard. You know, Bond is going to be with us for a considerable period of time, certainly a lot longer than The Spy Who Loved Me, but never mind. Welcome to the program.
Well, I mean, The Spy Who Loved Me, I think you mean The Spy Who Dumped Me.
Yeah, you see, it's all taken.
But let me just say that I was just issuing a warning to Bond, because you can't dispute it's been a complete mess recently. If Craig said he slit his wrists before playing in Bond, and now he's been dragged into the 25th, and look what's happened. Boyle, first he said he wouldn't direct, then he said he would direct. Now creative differences between Michael G. Wilson, Barbara Broccoli, the all-powerful ones, and Boyle have bled to him and the screenwriter going. Then we've had the fun and games with Idris Elba and whether a person of colour will be playing Bond or not, or it will be him, and so forth. The series has got to sort itself out. My point is, it has lost its way when it comes to the mix. We saw change in Star Wars, and look how successful that was. What we need is part of the mix, but realism and female characters who are believable. How could you disagree?
Because Bond is with us forever, and he will always be back with a bang. Like diamonds.
What sort of Bond?
Everything reflects the heroes we deserve, much as David Beckham can never, ever receive an honorary knighthood, or indeed any knighthood.
When they talk about honorary knighthood, I'm asking for him to receive. He's British, for goodness sake. We give honorary knighthoods to people who help Britain who are not British.
Yeah, well, I question that. I mean, Aaron Craig, David Beckham, should he be given a knighthood?
Yeah, but you obviously never learn who turns him down, but there's a lot more deserving.
All those financial shenanigans they get involved with, Gareth Southgate and so on. I'm sorry, if HMRC sort of want to actually ensure that tax is being paid, etc., you can't be issuing awards and trinkets to people who kind of play the system, Richard.
Well, firstly, let's be absolutely clear. With the report in the Times, nobody, as far as I know, there was Tower's tax scheme that was challenged linked to Beckham, yes, but the others hadn't. And I'm talking about, you know, the big names, Lineker, who'd also got an OBE, Rio Ferdinand, Robbie Williams. These are huge. I mean, the point is, if you're doing something unlawful, indeed, you should not. There might be an aggressive tax scheme your accountant could be participating in, and the government should then surely be responsible for closing it down. I mean, these people have achieved a lot, and also don't forget the charitable aspect of it, because most honours now are linked to charity. And you're talking about, I mean, for example, Beckham, UNICEF, malaria. An enormous amount for charity. I mean, Beckham's an international brand, 115 caps, you know that. I know there were embarrassing emails. The point, though, it seems to me, that Beckham got a knighthood, got an OBE in 2003. And I mean, there are always 5 years between honours, at least. But to give him nothing subsequently, he's one of the best-known Britons on the planet. And
Richard, he played for Manchester United. He doesn't like Man City. End of. There's no. it's a stop there straight away.
I see. I didn't realise there was that aspect.
Exactly. Let's move on to The Spy Who Dumped Me, or not, as the case may be. Did you rate it? Should we go and see it? What are the thoughts?
Well, I mean, quite honestly, I mean, this is not the sort of movie that is normally one that appeals to me. Susanna Fogel directs, and you've got two top-class stars. Cashier Audrey, played by Mila Kunis, is dumped by her boyfriend Drew in a text, and her best friend and roommate Morgan Freeman, no less, played by Kate McKinnon, of whom I'm extremely fond, suggests she burns Drew's things. Drew, it turns out, is a government agent being pursued by men trying to kill him. The plot, frankly, isn't worth reciting because it goes, they go to Vienna and then they go to Prague and there is a USB flash drive which is wanted by various criminals. And where indeed does she put it? One guess only, given the nature of this movie. There's even a deadly assassin, Najeda, played by Ivana Tsanko, and all sorts of, I have to say, rather silly scenes, but equally, even Edward Snowden is involved in it, an actor, I hasten to add, playing him. But I do have to say one thing about this movie. I really didn't expect to enjoy it, and I did have a lot of laughs in it. Now, that, as far as I was concerned, was satisfying. I would make the point it doesn't really decide what it wants to be, because, of course, it's primarily a comedy, a sort of action comedy. But on the other hand, there are a lot of pretty gratuitous violence in it, and that seemed to me unnecessary. And we've seen so many car chases and fights and so forth in so many movies over decades. But I do like Kate McKinnon, and I thought that she did extremely well in it. I'm not saying the material was the subtlest that I've ever seen, by no means. The point is, if you don't think you're going to enjoy something and you end up having rather a lot of laughs at it, you chuckle away. Mila Kunis is, she was very good in Black Swan. And as a team, I mean, they're not up to the level of Julia Roberts, and I think it was Melissa McCarthy in Heat, which I thought was hilarious. But it is aimed at an audience. It has actually divided the critics totally down the line, with 50% of them disliking it and 50% of them thinking that it brings it off.
And 90% of the audience not even bothering to see it. So, end of, really. It's gone into... Aaron, does this appeal? Would you be checking it out?
No, definitely not. It's not really my type of movie, really, so...
C'est la vie. Nice little cue there for your next little number, Richard.
Yes, it is, because it's a French film starring an actor whom I'm extremely fond. It is directed by the team who made Untouchable, starring Omar Sy, which is a very, very sensitive and successful film. Olivier Nakache and Eric Toledano. And we meet one of my favorite French actors, Jean-Paul Bacri. He plays Max, who's a wedding planner, a nod to Adam Sandler there. I don't think the two movies have nothing in common. But nonetheless, he's one of the most diabolically compulsive character actors in French cinema, because he invariably plays a character with an ego, which is almost invariably deflated. He's hilarious when he's outraged. And then he has a show of hurt pride. And it's his birthday. He's in charge of preparing a wedding party at a 17th century chateau of groom, Pierre, played by Benjamin Laverne, with a gigantic ego. And the fun of the film is seeing how everything goes wrong, and it's absolute chaos. So is his life. He's rejected by his assistant, Josiane, played by Suzanne Clements, who he's having an affair with, and quite literally hiring the wrong band, having people amongst the planning team who shouldn't be there. He's absolutely petrified. There's a man throughout the ceremony, such as the ceremony is, who is watching with holding a briefcase, and he becomes obsessed by the fact that this must be an inspector. So the members of staff that he has, who are there illegally, have to mingle and pretend to be guests, and so forth. This is just... It happens in life. Indeed, it does. It's harmless.
Richard, I'm already looking at it. I'm thinking this is like a standard day at Rockcliffe Hall, isn't it?
Yeah, it sounds really good, actually.
I'll line for that, except obviously at Rockcliffe Hall, they don't really speak French that often.
No.
So I suppose they do, really. So I take it thumbs up, Richard.
I think it's thumbs up, but it's a thumbs up at a certain level. Bacri has been involved in far better films, but on the other hand, I mean, this is just a bit of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, quite honestly, there's probably more fun the greatest showman to be found in this, because he is a showman. And it shows that the show must go on despite the fact that everything goes absolutely dreadfully wrong, something that you are not surprised to discover. It's just the way it's done. It's got an amusing script, and it's a cornucopia of fun. But, I mean, all right, he's not particularly subtle. His crew with Adele, a very good performance by Aya Hadana. We'll see her again, who's the manager, tries to control, and they're absolutely uncontrollable. But nonetheless, it's very amusing, and Bakri is a superb performer. So, yes, if you like the sort of thing and would like a bit of light-hearted entertainment...
Richard, eminently sensible, absolutely wonderful. We're so tight for time these days that we're going to have to move on with Bewitched, actually, in their version of C'est la Vie. Strangely, it doesn't feature in the movie C'est la Vie, but never mind. Whatever happened to those Irish young ladies connected to Boyzone, I believe, via blood. Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I certainly have.
Will you be back with us again, tax scandals notwithstanding, of course, next week?
I certainly will.
Just want to make it quite clear that Richard has never had any tax scandals in any way, shape or form whatsoever.
I'm very grateful that you clarified.
Yeah, it's a sensitivity. We have to get the communication aspects out there from that perspective.
So we do, we certainly do.
David Beckham, on the other hand, well, you know, it's... what do we say?
Some people say I look like me dad.
What? Get down from a treehouse sitting in the sky. I wanna know just what I do. Is it very big? Is there room for two? I got a house with the windows and doors. I'll show you mine and show me yours. Gotta let me in. Hey, hey, hey. Let the fun begin. Hey, I'm the wolf today.
This is the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren Radio.
Thank you, Florence.
Hello, Ian Lennox. Are we keeping well? Did you enjoy the Kyle Walker and Raheem Sterling production over the weekend, where you have two English lads going to magnificent goals, that has to be said?
Yes, right. Thank you.
Now, who are they playing now? It's a side who I think, if I can make the point, have actually got 1 point under Rafa Benitez and are still ahead of West Ham United. So good news there, Ian.
Yes, look at all the money they spent.
Well, there you are, you see. So, I mean, I'm chatting with the awesome Aaron Craig in the studio, executive chef at Rockcliffe Hall. owned by Steve Gibson. And as you said, all good news while Steve's on holiday. He's coming back this week. Could Borough's start to the season collapse completely?
Who knows? They're doing well at the minute, so let's hope we keep it up.
Yeah, precisely so. Marching through on that basis. So, Ian, I think you have spoken to Aaron before in times past. I know Aaron was very keen when you were actually on. You have got a Newcastle United lad and ace author and an executive. By the way, just explain the difference between head chef and executive chef.
So, obviously, I look after multiple outlets, so it's... At Rockcliffe, we have four kitchens, so I look after two of them. So each kitchen has its own head chef, and then I look after each kitchen as well. So
there's a novel waiting to be written about a head chef looking after two kitchens as an executive chef. There we are. See what we did there? Yeah. Look through that. Have you got any questions, Ian, you'd like to put to your man, Aaron, about life and times? And obviously, you can't necessarily give any secrets about Borough's fantastic production at Rockcliffe Hall. But who knows? I mean, you could talk about it. I mean, players that are no longer there. There are so many secrets. Because all the players have their own particular diets, don't they?
Yeah, I believe so. Obviously, we don't really look after Middlesbrough now as much now because since I told went. But, yeah, they're very fussy on what they eat. Really.
Do you mean Tony Pulis hasn't followed the footsteps of Aitor Karanka?
No, I've totally changed it.
Right.
Totally changed it, yeah. So, but
it's quite amazing the way things have regressed in that respect, isn't it? Because I remember the days when footballers used to eat steak on the day before the match, on the day of the match, rather, and not realising that it took about 30 hours before the steak energy got through to you and you should be eating bananas and things like that.
Well, not just that, you also used to have a tot of whiskey before you actually went onto the pitch, and then you'd have a couple of cigarettes at half time.
Oh, yeah, they should dump the cigarettes in the aisle as they come off.
Exactly, these were the sort of classic lines. And we wondered why their careers were so short. You know, it's you know, one of those strange and bizarre and peculiar things is actually there. How are Ollie and Obo, Ian?
Very well. They're thriving and they've had a nice summer. I don't know how they're going to be the winter, but never mind. They're...
And how was the 60s night, or have you still to do it when you...
No, I did. It was good fun. I was a bit apprehensive because there's quite a well-known poet on the panel with me, but he's certainly a smashing bloke, and we've got on great. It was very interesting, actually, because one of the formats was that they showed clips of news clips from the 60s, television stuff. And there was one that was of the an overnight queue of fans for the Rolling Stones concert at the City Hall in Newcastle. And it so happened that the cover of my book, The 60s Man, which is the reason I was there, showed me at a similar event at the Odeon, where I was a young reporter, and the Time G television crew had arrived and took a film of me. It was found in the archives years later, and I used it on the cover of the book. So it was sort of related to that.
And I know Tessa Snott's already liked this particular thing, but I'm joining her and 22 others in, as you said, that social media post in which Ian Lennox says, I'm quoting, he's on the line so he could deny it if he actually claims he didn't do this, it was some sort of cyber avatar, was on a panel last week that discussed the 60s. I wrote a book called The 60s Man. You should say I wrote an awesome book called The 60s Man. You've got to big it up a bit more. One of the film clips showed young teenagers queuing all night outside the City Hall for tickets at a Rolling Stones concert. Now exactly the same thing happened when they appeared at the Odeon in the early 60s, except this time a Time Tees cameraman had the good taste to film a young reporter covering the event. Me!
Yeah, complete with pictures.
And that, Ian, is why you are a regular on Midweek Drive. And, you know, back in the day when Arthur McKenzie first suggested Ian Lennox, I spoke to Ian. Ian was, he didn't know what it was about. He said, oh, I don't know the whole thing. He's become just a fixture on the whole system. You know, a fixture celebrating the joys of Mike Ashley on a weekly basis. It's just fantastic. You know,
I think I predate the Mike Ashley, don't I?
Happy
days.
We'd have to talk about a whole variety of things from that point of view. Time is as ever of the essence, unfortunately, as we've got Rob Nichols to hopefully head off to. So I'm going to give you a choice of Rolling Stones pieces of music, may or may not like to actually see as your little end piece in this. We've got Gimme Shelter, Under My Thumb, Loving Cup, I Want to Be Your Man, Not Fade Away, It's All Over Now, I Just Want to Make Love to You, Time Is on My Side, Little Red Rooster, Heart of Stone, The Last Time, Get Off of My Cloud, As Tears Go By, 19th Nervous Breakdown, it goes on and on, Brown Sugar, Wild
Little Red Rooster.
Little Red Rooster.
Yeah.
Any reasons for that?
No, I just like it.
Well, I think that's an excellent choice.
Good reasons also.
Aaron, would you like to put those last two questions to our fantastic appreciator of good football at St. James Park? Where they you did score. I mean, you know, you did actually score, Ian, which was, I mean, there was a moment I thought, oh, it could all end in tears, you know.
Yeah, so I won't mention that this week.
Well, you know, but it didn't, and it was a fair result. And but for the bar, of course, you could have gone 3 or 4-1 down. Sergio took it easy on you this time, so Aguero didn't score many times, if any, actually. So
he didn't, did he?
No, he, yeah, he didn't, exactly. Anyway, Aaron.
The goalkeeper made a fantastic save against him later on, didn't he?
I think he got a...
He's a good goalkeeper, I've got,
exactly,
you know.
Exactly.
He needs to be. He gets the practice.
There you go. Clearly, Rafa Benitez needs to actually bring his team to Rockcliffe Hall, although that could cause civil war, I would have thought.
So yeah, maybe probably. Just, yes, wouldn't just, get out alive.
No, <it's yours. laughs> Over to you, Aaron.
Ian, have you enjoyed our telephonic link this morning?
Yes, short but sweet.
Yeah, and can we look forward to you coming back?
I do hope so, yes.
Thank you.
The little red rooster, two legs to crow for day. I am the little red rooster, two legs to crow for day. Everything in the farmyard upset in every way. The dogs begin to bark, hounds begin to howl. Begin to bark, hounds begin to howl.
A little after 14 minutes to 9 a.m. And had it not been for Rory the Lion, I would have thought an ideal mascot for Middlesbrough Football Club would indeed have been a little red rooster, because he could have done all sorts of things and they would have been battling. Also, the best person to actually ask about this, Aaron, would be whom, do you think, in terms of mascot, etc.? It must be. I mean, quite clearly, Mr. Middlesbrough, a man behind Discover Middlesbrough, Borough's number one fan, it has to be said. I know there are other people who sort of vie for the crown, but there's only one editor-in-chief of Fly Me to the Moon. It's Rob Nichols. How are you, Rob?
I'm okay, thank you, Alex.
Marvellous. Well, here we are, a glorious day in Lincoln, keeping the best of Middlesbrough across the globe with Lincoln and more, and Aaron Craig. Yet he's not a figment of our imaginations, Rob. He's physically in the studio.
No, don't believe it.
Yep.
Exactly. Exactly. He was in last night, he's in tonight. It's just been phenomenal, really. And Aaron has said occasionally at various press conferences with Mr. Pulis, you have kind of passed the time of day sometime. Was that this?
Well, we were supposed to hook up last Thursday, I think, and I missed him. He did pop in, but I missed him.
Yeah, you see, he's a very busy person. You've got to contact his social secretary, then you've got to go through various things. Honestly, it's easier sometimes to actually get an interview with Steve Gibson on one-on-one for several hours than it is to book Rob Nichols.
I realise that now.
Exactly. It's the critical things. Rob, good result against Leeds, 0-0. Were you happy? Were you satisfied? Do you think, yeah, that's all good? Or Aaron's just launched a possible a worrisome moment here, because, Aaron, share your theory with respect to Steve Gibson's presence or absence.
Well, he has been away, so I don't know if that's one of the factors of it, they're doing so well. So
whilst he's on holiday,
yeah,
comes back from holiday. Thankfully, it's the international break. And I don't think, Rob, you know, if you next time you're at the press conference, you don't say, yes, I'd like to put a question to Tony Pulis. Would you like Steve Gibson to stay on holiday for a considerable period of time?
Maybe not.
No,
maybe not.
No. It wouldn't be appropriate. Anyway, were you happy with the point against Leeds, or did you think, darn it, we should have actually had three?
I was really happy to get a point there, and I was very happy with the performance. I thought it was a great game. Although it was a 0-0, I think it was a real spectacle, a real good championship physical encounter, which in the end all the players shook hands after having kicked each other for 90-odd minutes. But I would have settled for, as they always say, I would have settled for a point beforehand, because that's what I said. But looking at it afterwards, we had the better opportunities, and yeah, we could well have won that game, but I'm happy to have held Leeds at their home.
Marcelo Bielsa et al, which is wonderful from that point of view. Do you get a sense that Leeds are going to be serious contenders this year, or do you think, well, they usually keep on going okay and then they hit a period of time where they just collapse completely and end up in 7th or 8th place?
Yeah. Well, that is the question mark over them, isn't it, at the moment? And they're a fiery manager, but they look well equipped at the moment. They are a physical presence and they score goals. And they can break teams down, and they've got a bit of a squad. Both teams are probably going to be there for quite some at the top, you know, challenging through the season. And that's a bit of a surprise. And that's a surprise from Middlesbrough, for a lot of even Middlesbrough fans, because we haven't spent quite as big as we did with Gary Monk, have we, last season?
Those are the interesting words. And in 24 hours from now, Rob Nichols will be joining me in a radio drama written by a mutual friend of colleagues and colleague called Mel, and it's going to be The Six Cluffies. Are you ready for that, Rob? Because we'll be in another studio, actually, at the James Cook University Hospital up in Teesside. I mean, have you been psyching up yourself to actually be Rob Nichols performing as himself, Rob Nichols?
It's a bit surreal. I don't know whether I can ever be prepared for that. Could we draft in Aaron as my my stand-in, my stuntman?
Aaron, do you fancy actually being Rob Nichols?
Depends on, he's very old now, so maybe not. I'm only 40 next year.
You see, this is Aaron kind of agonising yesterday, Rob, over the fact
I'm
that
too young
he
to play
he,
Rob
Nichols. Please, exactly. Let's just move on from that perspective. I don't know these youngsters, Rob. Sometimes you just
absolutely.
Yeah, it's just enough already. Please. Discover Middlesbrough on a slightly different note. Another sort of key thing that's coming together. People listening to this in Lincoln, why should they make the journey 126 miles north, 129 miles technically, to actually see some of the wonderful things that you're putting together, all about the history and backdrops and events that you've actually got around Middlesbrough?
Well, it's Heritage Open Days all over the country this weekend, isn't it? Probably in Lincoln. And we kind of extended that concept in Middlesbrough for 2 weeks at the end of October, incorporating the half-term holidays. We have all sorts of things, not just open days, but walks and talks. And in fact, we have one thing people should move from Lincoln to Middlesbrough, move all Earth to get there, is to see Captain Cook versus Captain Kirk, a head-to-head across the galaxies.
Well, Rob, steady. I mean, I always like to underplay these kind of things, but we'll do our best, is all I can say. We'll do our best. And, of course, moving on, Aaron, on the 10th of November, it's happening again. What's happening again? So another grand routine at Rockcliffe Hall.
Yeah, so we're doing 100 years down in history, so it'll be obviously 100 years since the end of the First World War on the 10th of November. So we're going to do a dining experience where... We've got dishes that the guys ate in the trenches in the First World War, and the guys ate in the Second World War as well on the front. So and it's hopefully have newsreels and a 1940s singer and stuff like that. So it's we have done it before at Rockcliffe Hall, so hope we're going to maybe do it a bigger scale this time.
Bigger, better, faster, stronger, like the $6 Million Man, but put together in all sorts of ways. You think Rob Nichols might put in an appearance there as a sort of guest playing himself?
Yeah, definitely. If we can hook up at the right time.
If you can afford me, Aaron.
these are the men. You've got agency, you've got a whole range of other bits and pieces there. If people are actually wanting to find out about Discover Middlesbrough, are things online? Can people access details online, Rob? What's the best way forward?
Yeah, sure. There's a Discover Middlesbrough Facebook page is probably the best bet. Google it as well. But we've got we've got 3 weeks worth of events, all sorts of things going on. Lots of reasons to come to Middlesbrough, and if popping up for the day or to stay over, all sorts of stuff going on.
It's a wonderful place, much like Lincoln. Oh, I just saw the Siren Studio sign there, so you just sort of wander from one side to the other. Look, it's passing, it's moved over there. I thought, it's possessed. No, somebody actually lifted it up and moved from another side. Sometimes very peculiar. Fly Me to the Moon, Rob. An international break, obviously taking time to relax on that side of things. A good start to the season, satisfactory? Do you think that Borough fans all over the globe can look forward with positivity to a good, satisfactory season, with ending in promotion, obviously?
I think we've made an excellent start to the season, and you said, Aaron said about Steve Gibson being away, and we've got a wily manager in Tony Pulis who uses press conferences very, very well. At times, you know, putting across the point that he hasn't got the players that he wanted, probably towards Steve Gibson who was staying away. but he's actually adapted. He didn't get the wingers in that he wanted. We lost our best winger in Adama Traore, and he's changed the whole tactics of the team to accommodate that. And that change of tactics, it just sums up Tony Pulis that he's able to do that. And that getting three at the back and using wing backs has been extremely successful. And when you think Alex and Aaron, less than 10 minutes from the end of our first game at Millwall, we were losing 2-0 and playing absolutely appallingly. And we came back to draw, and we've won. You know, we haven't lost the game since. So that's something, really.
So is the fans' view changing? Was it at the start of the season when he wasn't getting the players he wanted? Pulis, there was a lot of haters. Is the fans' mood changing about Pulis?
Well, it's got to, because he's been. If you look at his record since he came in last Christmas, he took us to the playoffs last season. It wasn't his team, and then this season has got us playing when we're very difficult to beat, but we're also beating everybody, especially at the Riverside. And we're at this moment in the international break, we're poised at the top of the table, just behind Leeds on goal difference. It's going to be a long, hard slog. There's a lot of games in the Championship, but Pulis is impressing everybody.
And the Carabao Cup obviously continues as well. Success from that perspective as well. Marvellous.
Yes.
In the next hour of the programme, we can welcome back, hopefully, BAFTA award-winning Graham Harper. Yay! William Sitwell on a bike somewhere in London. Lisa Faulkner, celebrity chef winner. And huge Rob Nichols nod of the hat here to comedian, broadcaster and novelist Julian Clary. I know, Rob.
Oh, brilliant.
Exactly. He's going to be talking about his latest book, The Bowls in Trouble, the fourth book in the children's book series, The Bowls. But I think we might just ask Julian a bit about Fanny the Wonder Dog and the Joan Collins fan club. Then again, he may not want to talk about those things these days. It's a bit like David Beckham. He's never going to get a knighthood. I'm sorry, I keep saying that. You know, he shouldn't have invested in those overseas stuff. It's bottom line. Aaron, last two questions, please, for Rob Nichols.
Rob, have you enjoyed your telephone link with us today?
I have indeed, Aaron, yes.
And can we look forward to maybe hooking up and maybe listening to you again on Sound 107.3?
And of course, there's
indeed,
always...
Indeed, as long as I don't get too old.
Never too old.
Rob, we have octogenarians at that point of view. I was quoting from William Shatner, who said that he's working on a George Burns thing of going to 100 and beyond as long as he's being booked. You know, we just keep on going. And you can also download all of the Fly Me to the Moon podcasts as well. It's just awesome. It's tremendous.
Absolutely. So I do it so.